Blog Talk Radio.
Of Sports Center broadcasting live from Patty's Bar here at Tropicana Field, also brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Ember, Pennsylvania. What can I say about the officiating in the National Hockey League? Unbelievable Tampa Bay and Montreal series. They hired a guy, Frank, a French-Canadian, to officiate a game at the Bell Center last night. Inexcusable. I just still, and once again, with 2 minutes left to go in the hockey game. Both teams are tied at 3-3. And this French-Canadian referee takes a call. It pushes him into the boards. Our guy, this Tappa guy, the Lightning guy, this Tappa, 2 minutes for interference. I hope this guy never comes referees a game in Tampa Bay again, or these fans are totally absurd. Sunday night,
Tommy, as I said, the guy should never be allowed to officiate a game in the National Hockey League ever
Roger,
again.
I was beside myself. I was sitting in my same chair at Patty's Bar when I seen the interference call, and Tommy, you know, works the press box for our games up there, and he just ran into him, and he called an interference penalty, which is inexcusable. You never see that. Old days in the National Hockey League, you let the teams play out to the best of their ability. You don't have cheap calls that way. And what do these guys do? Cheap calls up there. And one of the talk show guys down there, Frank knows him up there. He said, there's no hockey, you're fighting in playoffs. This host is from Philadelphia.
Calm down, Tommy. Calm down now. Don't get excited.
I talked to your buddy yesterday at the Falcons, J.P. Peterson.
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about it, and he agrees with us. You and I had a lengthy call about this the other night. I was totally unglued when I saw those calls. Absolute disgrace. It's a fix, in my opinion. And to allow a guy that lives in suburban Montreal to officiate a game All that does is take the National Hockey League and make it a minor league.
Yes. I'd like to welcome our guests.
Go ahead, Tommy.
I'd like to welcome our Philadelphia legend, Mr. Don Henderson, and Mr. Roger Hander, Orlando legend up there in Athens. But, guys, I was beside myself. Don and Roger and Frank, you remember in 76, one of the talk show guys down there said there's no fighting in playoff hockey. I was going to call him, but the guy lived in Philadelphia. He's seen the 76 Flyers. What did Schultz, Kelly, Selesky do? They go in the stands, and what happens in Game 7 down there? They almost got in jail by the Prime Minister McMurtry. And what happened in Game 7? The sign man had all kinds of pyramids down in the Toronto zone.
Well, Tommy, two things, and I agree with Roger. You know, you just can't have somebody from their hometown being the official that makes the call. I agree with that 100%. But I also think that you've got two Stanley Cup games that we can't even see on television. I mean,
That's right.
I can't make a legitimate comment about the call because I only saw the replays of it on the news. You couldn't get the Lightning on television last night in Sarasota or anywhere around. It wasn't listed anywhere on a station that we could get. So to me, that's the number one sin. You're in a fourth game and you have to win it. The second thing is that even though I agree with Roger, the best team won. I mean, there's no question about the best team winning the series. Regardless of what happens in that last 2 minutes and 45 seconds of last night's game.
Exactly.
You know, they had their chance in the first game. They couldn't win. They got blown out in the second game 4-1. They got knocked off in the third game. They were behind 3-0 last night. Got back into it at 3-3 and lost it with 2 minutes to go. But they were not the better team. The better team won, regardless of what you say about the officials. The officials made no difference in them losing the game.
Well, I'll tell you, Don, I disagree with one point. And that was the third game. I called Tommy after that happened. That was also the suburban Montreal referee, okay? And he waved off a goal that was definitely a goal, and I think that 99 and 99 hundredths of hockey fans would agree that it was a goal.
All right, let me interrupt Roger to ask this question because I don't know, and I agree with you 100% it was a goal. But Tommy, you're there. I mean, you can review everything else. Why can't you review a goal? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me that they review everything in the world and they don't review an obvious goal.
Well, I think that happened to Don and everybody. They had the rule up there. It's an old-time rule, I think, where the player goes in and the net should be stoppage of play. The referee lost the puck and picked Sovereign came
up. Why not replay it? Why not the officials go over like they do during the season and look at it and make the right call? Why don't they have replays in the Stanley Cup playoff?
Because one official missed that. One official missed the call, and the guy from the Montreal was right on top of the call, and he said no goal. Because the other guy was at the blue line watching that.
But my question is review. Why can't they review like they do in the regular season?
Right. They should be able to go to Toronto to the headquarters or the New York headquarters like they're doing in baseball where they have a team of officials there making the decisions. In the last week, I've watched games from start to finish for a lot of baseball games. And I'll tell you, when they question these plays, baseball's doing a great job of turning these around in a hurry.
Roger, I agree with you 100%. They can do it in 90 seconds in baseball because just what you said, they're not looking for some guy to get under a hood and make a call. They go back to central headquarters, they look at it, and within 90 seconds they have the call and you're back playing. I mean, if an argument took place, it would take a lot longer than 90 seconds to get back into play. So it's ridiculous to argue against having to replay in baseball. But no one ever explained on the telecast why they didn't have a replay on that.
Great question, Don. That's a one great question about because we're going to have Rick Peckham on later on in the contest up here. But he was calling the game up there and that. And I saw the replay and I saw the official. I said, where is the replay on that? Every other time they call stop play, huddle, bring it back up to Toronto. Up there
right.
And
we saw the replay maybe 10 times. And everybody that you listened to said it was a goal. There was no question
yes.
about the fact that he was out of the net, and also by a long shot by the time that goal went in to be scored. I mean, it wasn't
exactly.
even a question of – it was just ridiculous. And they can't review it?
Oh, it's done. I was furious about that. Tampa Bay's really furious about that call because they got it. Because if you see their replay, Cahorn, Carey Price is noted for this. He gets up top the slot, and he gets involved with the players. And virtually he go that Cahorn got into that. And P.J. Savard sat on him for interference, another call that missed. Cahorn get out of the net, and Callahan scored a goal, but everybody's out of the crease up there. And that was and that
well,
guy,
I hope we get Roy on with us tonight because maybe he has
my God.
Maybe he knows the rules. Cause I mean, I sit through – when we go to the games, you sit through 3 minutes of shovels every six
right,
minutes.
Right.
And they can't
that's
take
right.
a minute and a half to review a goal that's a critical goal in a Stanley Cup playoff game?
Tell me about it.
I agree with you, Don. You're 100% right. It's unbelievable.
I got to agree with you, too, Don, 1,000,000% about that. Because in the simplest goals, down the hockey game, they take the time out of review and that. And the
right.
referees,
well, why? That's what I'm saying. Why don't they do it in the Cup? I mean, here you are in the first round of the Stanley Cup Finals, and they don't review.
Don,
great
just
question,
to follow
Don.
Up on your question about the game last night, I had DirecTV, and it was listed on the NHL Network.
Right.
I put on the NHL Network, and it was blacked out.
No.
Now, why they have it listed, and then you can't get it, you know, and because I guess they put it into the package. But I got the Flyers-Rangers game was on CNBC.
That's right, and we also got Detroit. We got Detroit last
right.
night. That was on the NHL channel.
Network.
So we saw both of those games, which are meaningless in Southwest Florida. And we can't
right.
get that, and we can't because the Rays are playing, and normally it's on Sun Television, 38 here. You can't get it because the Rays are playing, so consequently, two out of the four games they played in the Stanley Cup playoffs, we didn't see.
Hey, guys, we're joined by the guy who is the most knowledgeable sports writer in the Tampa Bay area, Mr. Roy Cummings.
Maybe,
Roy,
he's, got the, maybe he's got
that's
the answer
guy we
for
want
us.
To talk to.
That's the guy.
Hey, guys, how's everything going?
Well,
tonight, not to get off the subject, but real quick, we'll all know what the schedule is in the National Football League.
Well, we don't have it yet.
I said 8
o'clock. I've been working on the story a little bit. Got a couple of tips, some hints, I guess. A lot of leaks being out. They don't know if they're solid or not. But it looks like they might open up with Carolina at home, maybe finish with New Orleans on the road. That's a couple of the things that have been leaked out so far. Again,
cool.
Don't know if they're accurate or not, but if everybody
right.
can just relax for about another hour,
sure.
you'll have your schedule and you can start making all your plans for the fall
now
and
let's
winter.
Get back to hockey.
Let's get back to the topic of the day.
Yeah, let's get back to something that matters, okay? Let's get back to something other than the calendar, which we know what it looks like every year.
Right.
Our question to you is, and nobody knows the answer, including the Tommy, who's right. First of all, we couldn't see two of the four games. That to me seems absolutely
oh, no.
incredible. Number
wait,
two, why can't they go back and review that goal that was clearly a goal? Everybody said it was a goal. Every one of the announcers, every one of the post-game shows said it was a clear goal. He was out of the crease. There was no question it was a goal. Why can't they review the play?
Well, they did review the play. And what everybody on the Tampa side of this thing is forgetting and missing is that this is how it works, guys. When the NHL looks at a situation like that, they're not looking at shots. They're looking at sequences. This is the critical matter that everybody on the Tampa side wanted to ignore because they were wrong on this. They look at the sequences. And the
they were what?
Go back and look at the sequence of events.
Right.
Kalorn is coming out of the net, and whether I honestly believe that Carey Price bumped him on purpose to create the situation whereby a goal, if it came in somehow in that sequence, would be disallowed. Because he's got, first of all, he's got a right to that blue crease. That blue area, the crease, is the goalie's territory and no one else. The rule
right.
states that no one else is allowed to be in there. And if you are, you are subject to a penalty of some kind.
Right.
So when Carey Price runs into Killorn coming out of the net, it doesn't matter how Killorn got in the net. If he runs into him in the net, and if anything during the net, during that sequence of events results in a goal against, the goal is wiped out. And if you go by and look at it, if, and again, you got to look at it objectively, guys. Carey Price hits Alex Killorn and basically stumbles. Therefore, he no longer has the opportunity to come back and be in proper position, keyword proper, to make the save on the goal that was scored.
So let me interrupt there for a second. Well, that, and I'm not disagreeing with you because I don't know the rule. I said this from the beginning. I'm looking at it as a, from a naive standpoint of just what I'm watching on television. Now, my question to you is, if that's true, why in the world does not the chief and the play-by-play announcer and all the people that are there, why don't they know that rule?
Well, guys, you'd have to ask them. Again, I'll just say this. I wish that if – let me just put it to you this way. I watched the game on Lightning Television just like everybody else.
Right.
In this room. And as soon as the game was over, in fact, as soon as that goal was scored for the intermission, I switched over to the NHL Network because I wanted to get an objective opinion. And the objective opinion that I got from the analysts on the NHL Network was that, yeah, the rule clearly states that if anything happens that puts a goalie in a situation whereby he can't make the save, the goal is disallowed. And what happened was, even if he initiates the contact, it doesn't matter who initiates it. He initiates the contact because that's his crease, that's his area. And once he stumbles, and then he stumbles and he's slow to get back, the stumble is what makes him slow to come back and keeps him out of position to make the save, and therefore that's why it's disallowed. And if you're watching an objective telecast, you're going to see that. If you're watching the Lightning, my guess is, and it was the case, they're going to screen the other way. And I totally see why. Look, I honestly believe that Carey Price initiated the contact. I think he's a very smart goalie, and I think he knew, hey, if something happens here, because I'm already out of sorts here in this situation, I'm going to bump this guy. I think he did it on purpose, and I think he did it to set up the possibility that a goal would be disallowed if anything happens before the puck is frozen in that spot or, you know, changes possession. I think that was number one. Number two, I can see it going both ways. I can see the goal being allowed, and I can see the goal being disallowed. In this case, and I honestly think the most objective opinion you got from the Lightning organization came from the coach, John Cooper, who said, look, I'll say this. He was adamant about the call when he made it on the ice, and he was adamant about the call when he went back and reviewed it, and therefore I can't blame him. He saw it a different way, and I understand why he would, but as soon as it happened, I said, well, look, this one's pretty questionable. But then when I looked at the replays, I said, it's actually not questionable. And I fully expected the Lightning people to see it a different way. And so I wasn't surprised by that. If you look at the rule, if you know the letter of the law in the league, it's a sequence event. It has nothing to do with shots. I know people were counting down the amount of seconds that they thought separated the contact between the goaltender and the goal being scored.
Right.
It doesn't matter how many seconds it is, really. The sequence of events.
Well, I'm glad you cleared it up for me because I honestly thought that was 100% incorrect. And I never saw them go over. I never saw the officials go over to review the play. That's what I was taught. I thought that, that the chief or somebody was going to say, well, hey, wait a minute, they're taking time to go back and review this thing. And I never saw them go to the sidelines. I never saw them go to the officials.
They don't have to go. Guys, they don't have to go because every goal in the league is reviewed. So it's being reviewed in Toronto, and it was being reviewed already. And my guess is that, you know, it was probably very quickly decided in Toronto that, hey, that's no goal because the goalie is bumped in the crease.
Right.
And he's trying to get from point A to point B, and the fact that he was bumped, that he bumped, that he had contact with Killorn, slows his ability, basically derails his attempt to get back to point B, and that's when the goal was scored. Therefore, it's no goal.
Well, I certainly welcome the fact that you cleared it up, because I didn't understand it. I still don't think the rule's correct from what I saw the other night. But if it's a rule, it's a rule, and I don't know. As I said to Tommy at the outset, maybe there were some bad calls, maybe there weren't. Hey, the best team won. I mean, I don't care whether a penalty was called or wasn't called. The best team won. They played four games, and Montreal won four games, and they deserved it.
You're absolutely right, and I'm glad you said that, because, you know what, as I said, you're absolutely right. Look, the Lightning didn't lose this series because they had a goal wiped out. They didn't lose the series because Cedric Paquette, who you can even question being in the lineup as well as you might want to say he played, even though he had a critical role in three goals against, tripped up a guy late in the game when the officials had apparently swallowed their whistles. The bottom line is the Lightning played maybe 22 or 28 minutes of good hockey in this series, and that's not enough to win you a series against the Montreal Canadiens. I don't care. You're just not going to do it. They did not play well. We did not see the team that we had seen all season long. That was not the same Lightning team that got 101 points. Whether that was a result of the team playing differently in front of Lindback as opposed to the way it played in front of Ben Bishop, I think that was part of the case. But let's face it, there were games. Lindback gave up at least one bad goal in every game. I think he gave up three bad goals, in my opinion, in Game 4. The first three goals against him, the only three against him in Game 4, I think were just horrible goals for a goaltender to give up. They were point-blank shots from the dot and further on out. You, as a goalie, you have to be able to stop those.
Right.
He couldn't do it. And I think it put him in a hole. I think it affected the psyche of the team in front of him. And they played differently as a result. And the different approach certainly wasn't a successful one.
Well, I'm going to get one last question on
this
topic. How did you see the game? Because we said at the beginning of the show, I didn't see Game 2, and I didn't see Game 4.
Aww.
And Rogers in Atlanta, and they had Game 4 listed on the National Hockey League channel, just like they had in Sarasota, but they had the Detroit game on here, and they had the Flyers game on in Atlanta. How did you see the game?
Well, the game was on Fox Sports, Florida. Now, Game 2, they had a problem in the first period. So up until 14-11 in the first period, there was a technical glitch at Fox Sports, Florida. They had the wrong feed, and it took them close to 45 minutes to get that thing straightened out. So you did miss the first period. But after that, it was back on where it was supposed to be. And it depends on what your cable system is. I've got Bright House Networks, and that was the only one that had it, that failed to get it, by the way. It was Bright House, according to what
I was going to say, because I tried everything in the world, and I guess we just don't get that here. I mean, because I couldn't find a game anywhere.
If you're on HD channels, it's as simple as this, and you could just relate this to whatever your channel lineup is. If your normal Fox Sports channel is 1148, which it is for me, that's the HD channel, that's where I get the Rays and the Lightning. On this night, because the Rays were playing, it was 1149. What they do is, when there's two events on the same channel or from the same network in a situation like that, it's not NBC or CBS, but it's sports channel, what they do is that night, they'll add an extra channel to the lineup.
That's what Madison Square Garden does, the same thing. They take, if there's a conflicting game.
SNY does that too, yeah.
Yeah, SNY
does. And that's
what
they did. And I guess, I don't know who you blame for not letting people know where it is. I guess maybe you just have to kind of be TV savvy to know where it is. I know where it is, so I guess I take it for granted that I know.
Well, I'll be honest with you. The third game that I didn't see, I looked in the article in the paper, and I get the Herald every day. I looked in there, and I thought there'd be something within the preview game page that would say what channel it was on and where you could get it. Nothing was there. Then I went to the TV section, and they didn't even list any place that you could get the Lightning game. So, and as I say, I tried all the channels here, and I guarantee you it was not broadcast here.
Well,
I'll tell you, Roy, I said to Don, I have DirecTV,
And they had the Flyers game on CNBC. And, and of course, NBCSN had a game. And forget the other one. But the NHL Network on DirecTV had the Lightning game, Canadians game listed. And I tried
and I
went to the NHL several times, and it has that that menu, you know, they put on there. If you if you're not getting this, then call this number and everything. And but it was just not to be found on DirecTV at all.
Well, I think what the problem there was, you're right. To be honest with you guys, because of the way the game three was handled, in terms of, you know, the broadcast of it, I wanted to actually watch game four on the NHL Network and watch the CBC feed. So I turned on the NHL Network as well, and as soon as 7 o'clock came around, what they basically did was switch to a studio show.
That's
which
right.
Told me that because the game was being broadcast locally by a local feed here in Tampa, everybody in the region, my guess is, got blacked out on the NHL Network. So that game was probably available on DirecTV somewhere else. You probably have to go to the hockey channel, like if you buy the hockey package or something like that.
Right.
I think that's a shame for the Lightning. Even though they lost in four straight, and they certainly did not deserve to win. I think they did deserve to have the games on television where at least people from Venice on up could see it, or people in Tampa.
The mistake there, I don't think it lies with the Lightning. To be honest with you guys, Rogers in a completely different situation because he's in Atlanta. But for people in the state of Florida, I blame the, in particular, as you mentioned, Don, I blame the sports editor at the Bradenton Herald, because I think you owe it to your readers to make sure that you've got it listed. I know in our paper we have exactly what network the channel is on, the game is on, what the channel number is, and we've got it at least twice. We have a graphic on the front page that tells you where it is, and then inside we always have a TV listing for the night, and that tells you where it is. So we double up on it just to make sure everybody knows, depending on how they're accustomed to finding their sports TV guide, so to speak, tonight. But guys like Roger, you know, he's kind of at the mercy through DirecTV. But anybody, I think, in the state of Florida, I honestly think that sports editors of the papers, at the very least, require, you know, it's up to them.
Sure.
They offer that to the people.
Right.
Especially in Tampa Bay. Especially, I mean, if you go down to Fort Myers, even Fort Myers, to be honest with you, but you get down to Miami, maybe they don't care as much about the Lightning. But certainly in Bradenton, where you are, Don, throughout south of Venice, I would say that's got to be in the paper.
Boy, I'll tell you, I really would. So I've spoken my piece. I defer now. You guys pick up what you want.
Hey guys, I'd like to welcome Susan from USO for a minute. Susan, you're talking to Don Roy, coming to the Tampa Tribune, a good friend of ours, and also Roger Hander up in Atlanta. Susan, how you doing this evening? We're getting you all hockey talk for you right
fine.
Now.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on again. I appreciate you giving us this shot for the USO. I do have some scoop on the new USO that's going to be that's being in the planning phases for GOA, which is Orlando Regional Airport. They had us down on a ground floor, and now this is scoop, so don't tell anybody.
We won't.
I think we're going to get moved up to a higher floor in a more visible location, and this is huge, really good news. We are so excited, totally stoked, because it will take, most USOs are kind of in out-of-the-way places, and we have a really big billionaire who will have to remain secret until he wants to be known, but everybody knows him in the Orlando area. He is going to assist us with the financing on it, and we are so excited because this will be a premier location for the USO and will really service our military members when they travel through Orlando, when they're visiting there. And it will be located kind of close to a really beautiful hotel in the airport. I'm not going to say where, but I've heard. So I'm giving you the scoop that nobody else knows but me, and I'm giving you no specifics so that I don't get in trouble. How's that sound?
I'm with you. But, sounds good to me. Anything we can do for the USL or for the military is great with me.
Excellent.
Amen.
I appreciate it. And
amen.
I got some tickets were donated by, remember Tommy, that fellow that I was talking with last week? I just haven't had
yes.
time to get by to pick him up this week, but he donated 20 tickets, and
yes.
we got an, yes, he's you know, planning to give those. We appreciate that, and that'll be very helpful for the military. And I heard that my daughter, we call her the Barbara, and her boyfriend Blaine were watching the Lightning game in Canada.
Uh-oh.
And I heard that we were robbed. Almost hurt our boy Stamkos. I'm just so upset about that. So is she.
Oh, I tell you, it was a good game from the Lightning organization standpoint. We made the playoffs. That's what we wanted to do. And you go from there,
and all the
youngsters got this great experience. And this disheartened me about the officiating call. But then again, we made the playoffs. We had two home games, and next year we built from there. So everybody down in the office was
good.
Gloomy today. So you got to be ray of sunshine and confidence. That's what I look at right now.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, thank you so much for letting me say give a plug about USO. USO is there for all military active duty members and their families, and we do assist retirees and any veterans, and we'd love to have you come by to Tampa International Airport. We also have one that will be opening at the USO Day Room at the VA Hospital in Tampa, and soon to be September or October of this year will be the one at Orlando Regional Airport. So, International Airport. So, thanks, guys, for letting me be on. Give a plug once again. I'll try to come up with some more interesting gossip next week about what's going on with USO and veterans things in the area, okay?
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you for
all
your dedication.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm getting ready for a board meeting this Sunday, and we have a guest flying in this Sunday that we will be meeting, and maybe I can have some good news for you by next week or the week after. Okay,
well,
thank
you always
guys.
Have an open mic here on this program.
Oh, thanks.
For any
appreciate
one of the
it.
Nights that we're on. We're on seven nights a week, and you just give me a call, and we'll get you on.
Oh, great.
That's
well,
great.
I'll get the other numbers. There might be something else really good I have to tell you.
Thank
you.
Thank you, Susan, for
all right,
coming
y'all
on.
Take care.
Thank you. Now. Wow.
Well, great evening.
Real quick, back to the to the game for a second, Roy. What's your opinion about having a homer referee do those games?
Uh-oh.
Well, what do about it? You know, just like the game itself, I don't know what the percentage is now, 75-80% of the players in the game are from Canada, and I'd say a good 75-80, maybe 90% of the, maybe more, of the officials are from Canada. And there's only six teams up there, maybe even more. I'm playing my math is off.
I was just wondering, the guy is from suburban Montreal. You're telling me they can't
do about it. They're supposed to be objective. They're paid to be objective, and I believe they are.
Okay.
That's burned me up before. I never complain about officials. I don't care where they're from. Their job is to officiate the game, and I think they call it evenly. And I if they're intimidated in some way and they're allowing fans to interfere with their judgment, then that's for the league to look into and reprimand. And if they're not good enough to have current NHL officials, then you move. But I don't.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, and I'm sure you've talked to Ed Hockley, NFL rep, and he lives in Phoenix. And a couple of years ago at training camp, I had a nice long conversation with him. And he was telling me that the only time during a season, that season, that he got to do a game in Phoenix so he could be home was a preseason game. They will not allow a referee from the area to do a game in that city. And I don't know whether that's across the league or not, but that's what it's told me personally.
I think you're talking about a much the situation is a lot different. It's a lot easier to control where officials are in the NFL on the court on a Sunday, as opposed to where they live or grew up or whatever team it is they might have rooted for. Look, just because the guy grew up in Montreal or lives in Montreal or somewhere in that area, for all we know, he was a Quebec Nordiques fan, not even in the league anymore. So, you know, we don't know that. I would never go so far as to suggest that guy, you know, could know. Look, Don Koharski lives in the Tampa Bay area now. He did late in his career as an official. I don't think the Lightning ever got favorable calls from Don Koharski. You know, I just don't think professionals act that way. And, you know, to be honest with you, I'd love to see professional broadcasters, you know, radio and TV and reporters, you know, be objective too and just say, look, here's the bottom line, guys. There was, what was there, 30 minutes left in the game or 28 minutes left in the game when that goal got disallowed? It was 1-1. Go score another goal. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They weren't good enough. So maybe that's the reason they lost. They're not get jobs.
No, you're right.
They weren't.
Well, I think, too, Roy, that even Cooper said it. He said, we're a young team, we're learning, and this was a learning experience in the Stanley Cup playoffs for both of these young men. The first time they've been involved, I mean, he all but said, look, we were beaten by a better team.
Yeah, they were. And, hey, look, guys, listen. Tell me, outside of the Fab Four, 20-some years ago, I guess it was, in the NCAA basketball tournament, when a team as rookie laden as this one wound up being, in essence, and as inexperienced, 12 players making their NHL playoff debut, Stanley Cup playoff debut in this series, tell me what a team that young and inexperienced in this kind of a setting succeeded and excelled in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I just don't think it happened. So this is a young team, and you know what, guys? I talked to some people because this is my job, and some of the people didn't do their job. But I talked to some people in the Lightning organization the first day I was there, and they'll get Tommy can tell you this. Guys, I made it to one Lightning game this year, and I went as a fan to see him play Vancouver about a month ago at home. And because of my schedule and stuff like that with the Bucks and the way things have gone with them, I just never got a chance to get out to the game this year. Well, I didn't
see
the team at all. I didn't see anybody. But I still have a lot of people that I know in that organization, and they still tell me a lot of things, I think that, you know, as a reporter, I would find a way to get into the newspaper, and if, you know, if I were a broadcaster or someone with the team, I would try to get this kind of information out. And basically what they told me was this: look, it's great that we're in the playoffs. We can't expect to go very far here. Let's see what happens. It's a nice story. Because it's another step up, but you know what? It's probably a step we're not really ready to take. We should be thankful that we're allowed to take it, because a lot of young guys are going to get some experience this year that's really going to help them down the road. We don't think we're a Stanley Cup contender right now, and that we're getting this experience is tremendous, but I don't see us really winning this series. Maybe we'll get lucky and win a couple of games. This is what was coming to me from people inside the organization. They're listening all the time. And I think sometimes that the public is sold a little bit too much on how good the Lightning were. Now, granted, Steven Stamkos is a tremendous player. He didn't have a great year. He was hurt, and he wasn't, you know, really that solid down the stretch. They lost their number one point producer in Marty St. Louis. They traded him away. They lost their goaltender, who was clearly the guts of this team. And it was a young hockey team. I don't think this team ever had much of a chance to go very far to begin with. And I said, I think I told you guys, you know, a couple weeks ago, look, the problem with this, the thing the Lightning need to lean on the most here is that they're in a conference that is horribly weak. I don't think, outside of Boston, I don't think there's a good team in the East. And the Lightning, unfortunately, you know, I think kind of proved that they were just a little bit out of their element when the playoffs started. And I'm still not seeing, you know, Columbus isn't special. Pittsburgh's not special. They can't knock out Columbus. Detroit's hanging in against Boston a little bit. You know, so, like I said, Flyers and Rangers, even series. I don't think there's a great team in the East, and that's why I thought the Lightning had a chance to go a round or two. But I was basing that on a team –
I think, Roy, that the first game really was indicative of what happened. I mean, they were outplayed in the first game, and they were fortunate enough to come back and tie it up. Just send it in overtime. But when it got to the overtime, they had no legs left. They were young. They were mentally spent. And I think that was really an indication of the entire first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think by not winning that first game, even though they were outplayed, they had a chance, I think that pretty much set the tone for what was going to happen.
I think you're right. And I think what happened, look, here's the thing. At no point in that series did I ever think that the Lightning were in total control of the game, of the period, of anything. They had some periods where they outshot the Canadiens. Great, wonderful. At no point did I ever think they were the better team or in control of the situation.
Right, I agree.
And the reason for that is they lacked experience. It was a new setting for all of them. They suffered from that a little bit. The goaltending was inadequate. The defense was inadequate, and they were playing a different style for whatever reason. They kind of lost track of their system, and it ended up costing them. But again, I don't think it was. I think it was a great year for this team. Let's not lose sight of the fact that this was a very good year for this team. They realized that they've got players, and Andre Palat, and people like that. Victor Hedman elevated his game. They found their number one goaltender. I think they found that they don't need the backup anymore because they've got a better one in Gudlevski. You know, I think they answered a lot of questions this year that they were trying to hope they could get answered when the season began, and I think that's a positive step. They were not ready to win the Stanley Cup this year. I think a lot of people had false hope over what this team was going to do based on the 101 points. But again, in my opinion, it was 101 points gleaned off a very weak conference schedule. And I think they're going to be it's going to be harder to get those 101 points next year. But, you know, because of some of the answers that they've got this year, I think they're going to be in a good position to do it.
Well, Roy, let me ask you this question because your second love is Wrigley Field of today. I don't know whether you had a chance to watch all the ceremonies and so forth, but what a great day at Wrigley Field. But in the end, the Cubs were the Cubs.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see all the ceremonies because the game was going on while I was watching Bucks practice. It's that time of year.
Right.
I didn't get to see all the ceremonies, but I know it was a beautiful day there. I did get to see the end of the game.
If you had a Mackinac, it was a beautiful day.
Oh, it was a great day. And it's just unfortunate that this darn team can't figure out. You know, we were talking about the Bucks, Dave. The Rays go out and they just go get a guy, and they say, okay, you're going to be our closer this year. And every year it works out. And that closer, whoever it might be, goes on to become at least a closer for the next 2-3 years for somebody. Whether it's Rafael Soriano, Fernando Rodney, Grant Belfour, they got back this year. The Cubs can't seem to get a closer to save their life. And today, a guy that they're hoping could do it, Pedro Strop, got him from the Orioles a year ago, has had a meltdown inning in the ninth, and they're going to the lead, and end up losing, and it was a heartbreaker. But happy birthday to
him. He's in a 5-2 lead, and he walks two of the first three batters, and the third guy's in error. So they got the bases loaded, and they haven't gotten anything, and they're ahead 5-2, and they did get two strikes. They got down to the last strike before they finally gave up the tying run in the ninth inning.
Yeah, and not only that, but, you know, their right fielder in this game, Justin Ruggiano, blew out his hamstring, failing to make the catch that would have won the game. So it was just another bad finish for these poor guys.
Oh, yeah, I feel bad for you, Roy. Everything you said about Lightning is true. I'm talking for a company standpoint. The Lightning had a great year, even with great year. These youngsters got in the first taste of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and sure they got swept, but it tastes a sour taste in their mouth. Now they know what they've been there. We want to go back next year and get advanced more. This year reminds me of 2003 for the Tampa Bay Lightning. We all know what happened in 2004. I'm saying this is going to happen this next year. Boy, I just got a good feeling. They got the taste of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We hosted two playoff games. The fans are excited of next year already, no matter what happened about, unfortunately, official calls and that. But I'm excited for next year for the soccer team right now, Roy.
Well,
let me ask you a question about Marty. Since he's been up in New York, he's only had two goals that he scored. One was postseason. Now I understand they've moved him to the second line. What do you think's going on there?
Well, he's got two goals now. He scored one last night, and he also had an assist last night, so 2 points for him last night. I just think that they're, you know, it's not unusual for a guy like that to get bounced around a little bit. They're trying to find
sure.
scoring tandems that work for him. And, I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I'm anxious to see how that series finishes off now because I got to be honest, one of the things I was a little disappointed in with the Lightning was how Ryan Callahan played in this playoff series. After
mm-hmm.
games, he and Valtteri Filppula, which was one of their top guys throughout the regular season, were a combined minus six with one assist. And you can't get that yet. You know, as we all know from listening to John Tortorella back in the day, your best players have to be your best players. And, you know, Ryan Callahan was good from the physical part, but he didn't produce much else. And he's got to do a little bit more on the offensive end. Look, Tommy, I understand why you're excited. I know you always are, and I suppose Lightning fans will be, but I still think this team's got a ways to go. I feel, look, I think it found its goaltender. You know they're going to go in next year with Ben Bishop. You just have to hope he continues to do it. Defensively, they got some real problems.
Oh,
Matt Carl, Eric Brewer, Sammy
Don't
Fowler.
Start me on Brewer.
They cannot be part of this team going forward, Tommy. They cannot be. Radko Gudas is a nice young player, but he's got a ways to go to figure out, you know, right. when to make the hit, when not to make the hit. He's got to cover his zone a little bit better. They got a lot of work to do on that end of the ice. Offensively, Andre Palat is a player. He might be the best player on the team after Stamkos. I like Filppula. I like Tyler Johnson. But, you know, guys like Peyton Brown have to bring a lot more than just they've got to be able to finish opportunities, things like that. They've got some work to do, but they took a good step this year. That's what people have to remember about the Lightning. They took a good step this year. They proved that they're not a bottom third team in the league. They're at least a middle of the middle third in the league, if not an upper third, and they should get better. I really like what John Cooper is doing. I like his approach.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of good things that this team can look forward to in the coming years. I don't think they're there yet. I hear you talking about 2003. We all know they won a cup in 2004.
Yes.
I don't think they're that close, but they're getting better, and they should be a playoff team. The key is next year they got to make the playoffs. And because if you made it this year and you miss it next year, then this year meant nothing.
Right. Great point, Roy. I remember the old days. We used to watch playoff games on TV. At least we had home two home playoff games in live person at the hockey games, which I was excited about. You know, I was happy about that. Instead of the old days, we played golf and that. We watched on playoff games on TV. At least we've seen two live playoff games on television this year in person, which I was excited about.
Well, yeah, you got to be excited about that. That's, you know, that's the objective. And in the NHL, you know, if you don't make the playoffs, it's really a bad year because it's hard to miss them. I think the Lightning can be better next year and not get 101 points. They could finish, you know, they could be a wild card team next year and not be better. That's my point. I mean, I think they could be a better team and have fewer points and find it a little bit more difficult to make the playoffs. But again, the key is just getting into the tournament because once you get in, anything can happen. I mean, we saw it this year. You saw two teams
yes.
you thought were pretty even, and all of a sudden Montreal looked like they were Stanley Cup contenders and the Lightning looked like they didn't belong. So a lot can happen.
Yes. Exactly. I'll tell you, it was so great to see all the Canadian media down there, Roy, the skates and all that, and I love this time of year. I'm still going to watch hockey games on TV. Great, a lot of great playoff matches, and that I'm still going to watch hockey. It's just unfortunately Lightning went out and swept, but we had two whole playoff games. I was excited about that, so I still love my hockey, Roy. You know that.
No reason to give up on the game because the Lightning didn't win a playoff game, guys. No, you're right, Tommy. It was a lot of fun. I wouldn't put
there'll
any
be a, there'll be a lot of great games before it's all over. There's no question about
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
I mean, this is just,
no
this
doubt
is just
about
the
it.
Start of that. The other thing is, you know, Montreal's got to wait a long time now before they play in
yes.
the next round. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they can keep sharp because they're going to have a little layoff here.
Yeah, plus, they're not sure who they're going to play. I mean, Detroit, Boston, we'll see what happens. And so, that's kind of the bad thing about, sweeping a team out right away. Is you got to
right.
sit around a while. You lose a bit of your edge there. And if they got to play Boston,
yep.
which is, you know, more than likely going to be the case, that's not going to be an easy match for them. That Boston is by far the best team in that conference, if not the best team in the league, and they're gonna be very physical. So the best thing about it, I guess, is that they've got a chance to heal up a little bit from any bumps and bruises they might have picked up in this one.
That's true.
I think
long layoffs sometimes hurt you more than help you at this stage. You know, when you're playing at this level.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Hey guys, I got to run because the NFL schedule is coming up real shortly, and I got to file.
Hey, thanks for the time, Roy.
We didn't even get your opinion on the short workouts here, the voluntary workouts, but we'll get that next week.
Oh well, okay, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, save that for next week because I definitely got an opinion on it for sure.
It's a good thing, and
I definitely will give my opinion on that next week for sure.
I thought you're going to jump right in with that, but I'm on the way. We'll wait till next week.
Okay, we'll talk to you then, guys.
Thanks,
Roy. Thanks for coming. Anyway, we'd like to welcome a good friend of the program. He owns All Sports Arena in Newport Richey, Florida. A good friend of mine, Mr. Matt Carey. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Good. How you doing, gentlemen?
Hey, Matt. Good. How are you?
Good, man. Just busy as all heck, as normal.
It's been crazy. Tell everybody, Matt, what do you have going on in May, first off, and then your big event in September?
Well, we just booked the MCW Hulk Hogan Midget Show for May 2nd. That's new. I hope I mentioned that to you, the one that was on True TV. And May 10th is my MMA, which we spoke about before. It's already full card, 6 title fights. It's going to be a night to remember, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
And then as always, what I'm working on with Big Old Tommy over there is my Worlds event, which we're looking for some extra support from anybody that's looking to get a business name out there. Right, Tommy?
Yes, everybody, businessman, up and get back.
Let me just interrupt for a second and tell you that the Yankee pitcher has just been tossed out of the game. He went back and he put the grease back on the side of his neck again or the rosin or whatever he had on there last time out. And Cowboy Joe West just came to the mound, touched his neck, and threw him out of the game. So the
old
Yankee,
heave-ho.
The old heave-ho is right.
Jen, I'd like to change gears for a minute, Matt, if you don't mind. I'd like to welcome head coach of your Tampa Bay Storm, Coach Lawrence Samuels. Lawrence, good evening, and welcome to the Wednesday night program.
Hey, Tommy, how you doing? Hi, guys. How you doing today?
How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing
Coach,
great.
Coach, you know about that pine tar stuff that they...
Yeah, we found out all about it this week.
Coach, we got a big game coming this Saturday night. Spokane's in town up there. What's key for a W for us?
We have to put all three phases of the game together. As you see, 2 weeks in a row, different phases of the game show up and different phases of the game doesn't show up. So this past week, our offense showed up and our defense let us down. So the previous week, it was the other way around. So the thing is what we're doing as a staff, we're trying to get all phases to kick in and we'll be able to get a Storm victory come Saturday night.
Yeah.
I'm projecting a victory, Lawrence, because I got a good feeling. We owe this team one. Frank and I were just reminiscing before the program. This Spokane game was your last game as a professional, you and Brett Dietz up there, and unfortunately the Storm lost to those guys.
So we really owe these guys anytime we play them. But it's going to be a very competitive game. Both teams are coming off tough losses. They lost in the last second on a Hail Mary pass off the net against Cleveland. And we're coming off a tough loss, the things that happened to us up in Orlando. So both teams are looking for a very competitive match.
It's going to be a great crowd Saturday night, Lawrence. I wish it was Saturday night right now. I'm excited for every time we have a home player, home football game. The way the fans are coming out this year, the way the team's responding at home games, and the way that my favorite part after a Storm game, what you and the players do is meet the fans. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's big. Our fans bring a lot of energy to the game, really back us and get us really energized and get us going. and that momentum carries over onto the field. So, you know, we've been playing at home very well. Our fans give a credit to our fans and the way they've been showing up and really supporting us this year. And we're just looking to come out and do it all over again this weekend against Spokane.
I think I can't wait, Lawrence. It's going to be a great game, and hopefully Michael Lindsay can break that record, Lawrence. I think it'd be wonderful.
I'm pretty sure he can do it. You know, it's I think he has like 36 more yards to go.
Yes.
Mike's been very consistent throughout his whole career, being a consistent kick return for Camp Bay Storm. And he's going to break one of the all-time legends' records, that's George LaFrance. So, George, he calls him every week talking about his record. I think it's going to be taken down this weekend.
But, Frank, we have no mystery guest for Lawrence this week at all, or what? Oh.
All I can say is it took you so long to get on that I lost my mystery guest. I am trying to get him.
We thought it was one guy, Lawrence, but now it's another guy. He surprised me already.
Well, Lawrence, as long as they don't bring the commissioner on for one word, you're all right.
Is Matt still with us, Frank? Matt?
Yeah, Matt's still there.
Matt, tell us about your world event, because Lawrence like to maybe come out and see this world event coming up.
Yes, Ball Hockey Worlds 2014 Masters event sold out. 43 countries were invited. Just alone in Canada has four teams coming, Greece, Slovakia. It panned out better than they actually thought they were going to do because everybody wants to come to Florida.
Fantastic. Now, how can people be they want to sponsor this great event? How can they get a hold of you?
They can give us a call here at 727-845-7808, and they can also go through our website, which is all-sportsarena.com, or they can call Tommy because Tommy's involved.
Yes, they can give me a call. My cell phone available handy up there and that. So, Lawrence, you should see me running around that rink up there. Every time I go see Matt up there, I take some shots on goal. You should see me. I run around the rink a couple of times, and I need some oxygen.
We did have a couple of parents ask me when he was out there if they should call 911. I said, no, it's just Tommy. He'll be all right.
Hey, well, Lawrence, I threw the football today. We should have seen the spiral. You would have loved to spiral it, but my arm's still hurting now. But, Lawrence and everybody, I tell you a funny story. Playing for Springfield High School, and this was on the JV team. I never told this story to Lawrence and anybody, but I'll tell it to you now. So I was a running back up there, and I did a quickie right up there, pitch out up there. I scored a touchdown. So I started doing the dance. The coach said, what are you doing that dance for? I said, every Sunday in the NFL. I said, I was benched after that. I was doing a dance out there. Oh, God. Just after that, ninth grade, defensive tackle. I was short back then. Hit high, hit low. I gracefully put my helmet off, took my shoulder pads off. I'll see you in the first tee. I was in my football career up there and that. But Lawrence, I think it's going to be a great football game on Saturday night. I'm excited for that. I'm going to sit here and guarantee a win. I'm going to say the score is 55-32, Tampa Bay.
Ooh.
All right.
All right. Well, I'll guarantee that score right now. And Mr. Jackson's going to have four touchdowns. Mr. Jackson's five touchdowns. Michael Lynch is going to break the record. That's what I'm projecting right now, Lawrence.
All right. I'm projecting that, too.
Well, good luck, Coach.
There you go.
I got to get going. Good luck, Coach. I hope the Storm obviously get the victory. And, Tommy, thanks for letting me come back on here again. As you know, 8 o'clock is when I got to go show my ball hockey skills.
Bye, Tommy. Better than mine.
Tommy, we can attest to that with Matt because we saw him playing when we did the show there about a month or so ago. Matt, good luck with all the venues.
All right, fellas, good luck. Nice to have you on.
Thanks, guys.
Lawrence, good luck. Good luck, Lawrence. Good luck on Saturday. Wow. Don, Roger, and Frank,
right.
What a
Thanks,
first
Tommy.
Hour, my God.
Wait a minute, Tommy, while we got Lawrence on. We got a bye week coming up, and he said he wanted to play, so I don't know what day he can get out there.
Just let me know.
We'll do something to solidify a date on that that week.
Okay.
Definitely.
Gotcha.
We do that Saturday.
That way I can set up. I'll set up a foursome down here with Mr. Don before he goes home.
Sure, let's go do it. That'd be wonderful. Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are in charge.
Okay.
All right.
I'm in charge. Who's paying?
We never have a problem. You know, Tommy never reaches in his pocket, so we can go for three.
Hey, Lawrence, how about the company bought lunch today for us, right?
Oh, yeah. Great lunch today.
There you go.
Yeah, I had that fish today. It was good. Lawrence had that sandwich up there. We had him overlooking the waterfront up there, which is great up there. We had a
how many boxes did he take home?
I was going to take some diet soda back down.
They put the diet soda up too fast.
I should have took it down with me. I've been better, you know. I can see. Hey, but they did get the coffee machine fixed down there in that one break room. The coffee's still pretty good down there. I always used to meet Lawrence, but before the season, now that break, we used to complain about that coffee being so bad up there.
The one thing I'd like you to take care of, Tommy, before the new season comes in, it's great for the storm, but it would be great for everybody else, the lightning. Would you get a new elevator put in there? We don't have to use the freight elevator for an hour and a half trying to get up to the press box or get down to the anything. Just put the floor pan on the docket for a new elevator.
Yeah, handle that, Tommy. I told you how to handle it. Put it on the outside of the building.
Lawrence, that's beyond my control. You got more cough than I do down there. Talk to Jennifer Jeff. I can't do nothing down there.
Lawrence is going up to his office, and it's higher than the first floor. He doesn't get there till noon.
That's right.
That's on a good day.
That's
hey,
Don,
when I was down there, it reminded me of the old days at the vet with the media elevator.
Oh, boy.
And, you remember what that was like, and I remember the night I got stuck when they canceled that Ravens game when Billick wouldn't let the Ravens go in the field, and we got stuck for 45 minutes. But I'll never forget one of the great lines I heard when Izzy was the operator, and a guy asked him, "Did you learn the route yet?" <With the elevator. laughs> But that was classic, wasn't it, Don?
Well, the only thing about Izzy was he was so close to the floor he couldn't reach higher than the first button.
We're having a fun at Patty's bar tonight. Patty's just walking bar.
Hey, I don't know whether you've had a chance to take a look at it.
I can't hear
Roger
you.
Or anybody. Larry Schenck came with a new book. Larry Bowe wrote the foreword on it, and it's about stories in the dugout of the Philadelphia Phillies over the 51 years that Larry Schenck has been there. Starts in 1964, the most significant year, I guess, in Phillies history, other than winning the World Series. And it's quite a book, and I think you get a lot of fun. And maybe give Larry a call. I know he'd love to be on the show. He's promoting it all around right now, and so it's very interesting. I talked to him Monday, and he's got a lot of great stories in there.
Well, that'd be great because I'd love to have talk to him on the show, and I'm going up on Monday for a couple of weeks. So I'm going up, the following that week, not this weekend, next week, going to be up with my daughters. But I'm going to get to a couple of games at least next week, and I can't wait to read the book. And as I told Don, I have I'm mailing you a copy, Don, but it's on the website, but it's a little different. Larry does a great job of the alumni news.
Right.
And there's so much information in there about alumni players who passed away,
who's doing this. And I want to tell you, he's got to be congratulated on a great job he does on this publication, which Don didn't know it existed. I didn't know.
No,
and
I did not.
They gave me a copy. And then I went online, and there is part of it is when you go to the alumni on their website, but it's nowhere near as detailed as it is in the printed form.
Well, as I said to him the other night, you know, came in 1964, and he said to me, which is interesting, they had had three PR guys 3 years in a row. And he said to himself, man, when I get here, what am I getting myself into? Because everybody's only lasted 1 year. But he got a lot of stories from Chris Wheeler, a lot of the stories, of course, that he was involved in himself. And he'll be a great guest, and so we ought to get in touch with him and get him on the show.
By all means, I could hear some Richie Allen stories.
Well, we talked about a few of those.
That Saturday night, you went to the races up there, the headlight through the, your fist through the headlight. Oh, I still remember that.
But I'll tell you what, Tommy, Richie Allen, Dick Allen,
right
still on the Philly staff.
Right.
Yes.
He's an ambassador for baseball for the Phillies.
Yeah, he does a lot of work in the public relations area, going out to events for the Phillies. He represents the Phillies in a lot of different areas. You're exactly right. So after the Phillies have, I will say this, the Phillies have a tendency of, you know, forgetting the past and the good and the bad. And, of course, you know, it happened with so many people. Dallas Green, it's happened with in and out. Mm-hmm. Dick Allen, in and out. Dallas Green, in and out. You know. But they always come home to roost, and the Phillies take care of their own.
Well, you know what, Don? I've thought about this a lot over the years. The players that wore number 15 always had trouble with the Phillies long before you and I were around. And, of course, Dick Allen wore number 15 and
right.
Had a lot of controversy. And then I've often thought of and told John Mayberry, why don't you change numbers? Because maybe you'll have more success, you know? And, you know, there was another point that Roy was making, and I wanted to follow up on, and that was real quick about baseball. The defense this year in baseball is one of the worst I've ever seen. And the Phillies got a win last night. I stayed up till 2 a.m. watching that game.
Right.
But they were very fortunate to win because a ball fell between the shortstop and the left fielder, and it never should have fallen. And then Dominic Brown hit a double to bring in the winning run. But you see this, and Vin Scully, because the Phillies telecast was not on DirecTV last night. I only got the Dodgers. And Vin Scully was talking about, even though the Dodgers are in first place, their defense has been awful. I think they have the second most errors in the league.
Okay, guys. Let me just ask you this. I'll tell you, it's a pleasure to listen to Vin Scully. I mean,
it is.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, he's been there for 108 years, but he sounds as good today as he did the first day he joined Red Barber in the booth in Brooklyn.
You're right, and he does it solo the whole game by himself.
That's right. That's exactly right. Does it all by himself.
Hey, guys, we're joined by two guys from the Wilmington area, from up the Philadelphia area. Dave DeBerry was an excellent fighter, an excellent person. His current position is he's the director of defense at the Delaware State Police Academy, but he's also one of the best matchmakers for fights in the Delaware area. And Dave is on. He has some exciting news for our next guest. So, Dave, go ahead, take it away.
Hey guys, how are you?
Dave, good to
have a chance
to talk to you. I never did get a result from Frank. How did that last card go at the Leah Corps Center? How did it do?
Well, Ray Robinson scored a 12-run victory over Kasabov from Russia, and it catapulted Ray. Ray won the NABO title, which catapulted the number 8 in the world. Pacquiao, of course, is the world champion. So when you're in the top 10, he's in striking distance now to fight either Pacquiao in the WBO. In the WBC, it elevated him to number 10. So he's in the top 10 in the WBC and the WBO right now, and of course Mayweather's the WBC champion. So he's got some good company. So the win really catapulted him in a big way. And when having a name like Ray Robinson, you got a lot to live up to.
Oh boy.
Great.
That is true.
Ray Robinson.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing good, Ray. How you doing?
We're doing wonderful. Welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you.
Hey, Dave, you have a big card coming up on May 9th. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, May 9th, as you hear Ray's on the phone right now as well. We're really excited. Ray's the co-feature. Ray has really made a mark. Ray actually didn't know this, but Ray broke – this is probably the first time Ray's heard it, but Ray Robinson broke history. He's the first boxer in world history to win three major titles back-to-back. He's holding presently three U.S. titles. He won the NABA, the USBA, and recently the NABO, which is all sanctioned titles. They're under the WBC, IBF, and the WBO. So no fighter in history has ever won back-to-back, three back-to-back U.S. titles. In this case, three in a row. And so it puts him in it's a major opportunity for Ray right now. I've seen this all along. I've been on this radio show a number of times this past couple of years. Ray's the best welterweight in the world. I think the biggest danger for fighters like Pacquiao is to fight Ray, and he's proven it over the last three or four fights with big wins.
Congratulations, Ray.
I agree with Dave. Thank you.
And congratulations to you, Dave, and Champs Sports for helping him get to that position. It's always an honor. Guys, I don't know if you remember, but Dave got cheated out of a world championship himself. And he spent a lot of time in Washington trying to get things changed around as far as boxing is concerned with the late senator from Delaware. Dave has always done a tremendous job for the youth and for the young men in the state of Delaware and the Delaware Valley area.
Well,
Dave,
things sort of go together with boxing as far as Frank's. As far as youth is concerned, I mean, most of the youth programs, even going way up to Olympic Games, were really always pretty much sponsored by the police department and a subsidiary of the police department. They're the ones that always put it all together.
Yeah, the POW.
Right.
Dave, can you tell us anybody else that's going to be on your card?
Yeah, well, the fight's going to be May 9th. It's going to be in Dover Downs. We're excited the large number of calls that we're receiving. We're going to Ray is fighting a well-known welterweight last name Sosa, and of course that's a big name in boxing. So Ray's got a big fight on the card, as well as the co-feature is going to be Quinier Slock, who up to 11 rounds was really punching on Mikey Garcia, a big name in boxing, and of course the right now Quinier Slock is on this card May 9th. He's going to be the co-feature, and he's fighting Guerrero for the 126 pound NABA title in the top 10 world ranking. So we're going to have, of course, as a Philadelphia fighter like myself and Ray, we're going to have a number of fighters from Philadelphia, Virginia, and the surrounding region. And so we're really excited. A couple of fighters coming in from Jersey. My nephew Joey's going for his 13th win, and Omar Douglas, former national amateur champion, is going to be on the card. He's 13-0, I think, with 10 knockouts. And what's nice, guys, is what we're finding in boxing is a lot of people are getting disenfranchised with the sport because so much of the big fights were going on HBO, Showtime, and pay-per-view. And they're really enjoying the setup right now with 2,000 to 3,000 fans and reasonable ticket sales and big fights. So we're attracting big fights in Delaware, and we're getting a major draw from the surrounding states because they enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, I wanted to ask you, do you get a lot of support from the various athletic chairmen in the states? I remember when I was doing shows in New Jersey, we used to have Larry Hazard on quite a bit, talking about different boxing venues. And do you get a lot of support or any help in that area at all?
Not really. It's interesting. In 1992, when I fought James Toney for the middleweight world title, despite the fight sparked, Frank was touching on it, sparked the United States investigation in the sport of boxing.
one thing that was glaring was the fact that the sport of boxing is the only major sport that does not have a national commission. So I had the privilege of working with Senator Rawls, Senator Biden, as well as Senator McCain. And the first ever bill was passed called the Ali Bill. And the whole idea was to bring a unified commission, because what happens is if a promoter feels that a state is weaker with a commission, they'll tend to track to that state to promote a big fight because they can control the commission. So I think until a national commission is established, like football, baseball, and basketball, our great sport of boxing is going to struggle.
Frank, how many years have they been talking about this? I'll go back.
It's been a long time.
When the fights were at Madison Square Garden, all the big fights, they talked about a commissioner then, and that was in 1955. So
it's
a long, long time.
You're right about that, a long time.
Hey, Ray, you also have a gym that you opened up on Street Road. Can you tell our listeners about how that's going and how the training's going?
Training's going well. I love to be back. Dave and them got me right back into action. Delaware is like my second home now.
Uh-oh.
I'm fighting in Dover Downs again, so I can't wait to show my talent off. And I'm actually excited. I can't wait to see what I do. I think this is about my first time actually getting right back in there 3 months. So I want to thank Champs Management and Dave and them for keeping me busy. I stay in shape, so me having that gym, you know, give me the upper hand, and I'm constantly around boxing, I'm constantly around fitness. It's one of the best things that ever happened to me is actually opening up that gym. You know, this wintertime is really bad in Philly. Like, you constantly, with snow banks, constantly snow and storms. And I just, you know, I live right across the street from my gym, and I just go open up the gym, and I get on the treadmill or anytime I feel like I can just open up the gym, hit some bags and things like that. So it really been a big help.
Where is the gym located,
like
Ray? Whereabouts of Street Road? Is it Dean Parks Casino, or is it that by
Michael's?
Right
around Parks and Michael's. It's right near 85 East Street Road. It's in Greg Long's gym. I know Greg Long's gym been there for like 30 years, I believe. And it's right next to like Five Guys, the TJ Maxx, right across the street from the bowling alley and all that place right there.
I know exactly where it is. Yeah,
yep.
So does Don.
It's right in the shopping center.
If it's near Michael's on Street Road, you just come off US 1 and go down. It's on the right hand side.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's right
there. That's exactly where it's at.
So you thought you were going to get away with something. We know where you're going.
Hey,
Ray, wasn't Sosa on the last card that you fought on too? Wasn't he on Pelfrey's card?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
No, Sosa wasn't on the last card. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure if he's fought on a prior card. But it makes for an interesting match. And
he's out of Millville.
But the last card.
Let me ask you this. You talk about working out over at the gym on Street Road all the time. You're in there on the treadmill even with the bad weather. Are you in as good shape as a guy I watched on TV the other night at 49 years old and just kept going and going and going?
Yeah, because actually I'm taking a page out of some of the best fighters' books, such as Bernard Hopkins and Floyd Mayweather.
You better take one out of his book. 49 years old, he's fought 12 rounds with no problem.
Absolutely.
Hold the title.
They stay in shape, and they stay closer than their weight. And that's what I've been doing lately for the last year now. And I stay close to my weight. I stay in shape. So I'm just waiting for that phone call. Whenever it calls, I'll be ready.
Great.
Guys, I'd like to interject on that. It's a really good point. For six years, Bernard Hopkins was my chief sparring partner when I was fighting, and I tell you, the discipline. When I fought James Toney for the IBF middleweight world title, Bernard Hopkins emulated James Toney to a T, and I couldn't have found a better sparring partner. But more important than just the sparring and getting in shape was his self discipline, and it's very when we sign fighters at Champs, our goal is that we could contribute in that fighter's life in a number of ways. And one of the big ways is that when we sign a fighter, we want to make sure they're as clean outside the ring as they are in the ring. So we want to make sure they could be the greatest fighter, but if they don't have the discipline on the outside,
that's one thing Hopkins always had. And there's where, you know, when you have Ray Robinsons of the world, and you see when Ray trains, Ray stays about 5 to 6 pounds over his fight weight. Bernard, when I was at Split Rock, I'll never forget, I'd go in Bernard's hotel room. He would hand me, like, a drink, and it would look like mud. He would literally, he really big into the roots and the vitamins, and he kept his body weight always pretty much 5, 7, 8 pounds between each fight. He'd always keep his body weight level, so he would never be overweight. And Ray's doing the same thing, and you're seeing a good disciplined fighter. But I'm excited,
right,
too, because I feel like when you have the Bernard Hopkins of the world, you know, not only is he appealing to the older generation today, but he's also appealing to the younger generation, which we're dealing with a lot of obesity and other things, that you could stay in shape. You could still eat decent without gluttony, and raise the same way.
Well, I thought really surprising to me, I don't know if you had a chance to see it or not, but they did about a half hour, a little bit less, maybe 15 minutes on each fighter, and they did exactly what you're talking about. They showed him and talked to him in the dressing room, talked to him about his mental adjustment to boxing and how he physically and mentally creates this person that's such a great fighter at 49 years of age. I thought it was a great piece.
Well, you appreciate this too. And when you go to Bernard's house, he lives in Delaware now. He lives about less than a half mile behind me. Bernard has racks and racks of, now it's DVDs, but it was always VHS tapes. So one night I'm at his house and we're watching TV, and I look under his TV screen and there's fight tapes, and I'm looking, of course, I'm always intrigued. I want to see what fights he has. And I see Tiberian Hopkins. Well, I said, oh, cool, what's that? And he said, well, that's when we sparred. He was videotaping us sparring because I was 8 in the world. He was 10 in the world at the time. So he studies fights. So if you see, when you see Bernard, you don't just see a guy that stays in good shape. He studies the sweet science. He studies his opponent. He finds every weakness. He finds every flaw that he can. And that's one thing about Bernard. And I see, again, I say Ray Robinson soon is going to be the world champion. And I, so far, everything I've said from a testimonial went happened. I said Ray's going to win titles, and he's continued to win titles. And now they're in a position where Mayweather and these other guys can't, they have to sooner or later say yes. But Bernard's been that way. Bernard was denied for like 4 years, and then Trinidad signed a contract and he knocked Trinidad out. Then immediately after that, he knocked De La Hoya out. But it's just part of discipline and determination. But he studies every one of his opponents to see.
At 49 years old, he is everybody's role model.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
He keeps himself in shape. You never see his name in a negative context in the industry.
Only when he was young, Frank. When he was young, he had a lot of trouble.
But now he doesn't.
No, now he really changed his whole life around, and it's been, you know, just a great asset to boxing, a great asset to Delaware, a great asset to everything. The mental discipline that he has now, and as you said, he pointed out before the fight the other night, you know, how he was going to approach that fight, and to fight 12 rounds at 49 years of age against, even though he was a little bit less experienced, I think he only had 21 fights, the guy he fought, but it was amazing to watch him go 12 rounds at that and he creates the pace of the fight. He creates how you're going to fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that a lot of people miss is when they go to the movies and they see the Rockies and the guys are in these beat-up gyms and they can't even talk right half the time. And after a number of fights, there's a lot of pugilistic dementia and things like that. But you can see, talking to Dave and talking to Ray, these guys keep themselves mentally and physically in shape. They are always gentlemen. You can talk to them anytime. And, you know, they're really a credit to the boxing world.
They are. You're right.
Yep.
Yes,
well, thank you.
General, to change gears for 1 minute, I'd like to welcome a real good friend of mine. He's the best play-by-play man in the National Hockey League. We're so lucky to have him here with the Tampa Bay Lightning and Sun Sports. I'd like to welcome Rick Peckham to the program. Rick, welcome back from Montreal. I am so disheartened what happened, but at least we had two home playoff games. At least we saw some playoff games.
That's right, Tommy. It's great to be with you and the guys there. And, yeah, it was fun. It was very exciting at the Tampa Bay Times Forum. Certainly the atmosphere at the Bell Center was tremendous. Obviously the outcome, not at all what Lightning fans were hoping for. But, you know, they
they played well enough to have won three of the four games. I think three of those games were really, really up for grabs. But unfortunately, a young team like that, they've got to learn from experiences like this, and hopefully it pays off down the road for them.
It's so great to hear you and the Chief do that broadcast, and the Chief, you guys, I swear, you guys should be doing the national broadcast when I hear, not since I've been hearing on that NBC network up there and that, but, you know, I think this is great experience for the young players of the Tampa Bay Lightning, great experience for John Cooper and everything else. Next year's going to be a banner year for this organization, Rick.
Well, it's shaping up to be. The guys have to kind of fight through what a lot of young athletes go through, where they have outstanding rookie seasons, and then maybe they just expect that it's going to go their way. I don't know what all the dynamics are, but a lot of times young players will struggle that second season, so they've got to make sure that they stay as hungry and as determined as they were this year and use that experience to their benefit. I think that was something that helped Montreal in this series, because last year Montreal had a young team, and they were beaten in five games by Ottawa, a team that really didn't go any farther in the playoffs after that. And I think they used that experience of losing and losing some games badly to their benefit, because they were extremely sharp in the series. Montreal played a great series, and they were ready for anything the Lightning threw at them. And so I think that's the kind of experience that can pay off for the Lightning next year and the years to come.
Well, sad thing that we talked to Roy Cummings about earlier on the show was that, you know, we didn't get a chance. I'm in Sarasota. Roger is in Atlanta. We didn't get a chance to see two of the games because, first of all, the National Hockey League Channel was supposedly going to televise it, and we just never had the opportunity to see it. I only saw that controversial goal on replay in the news and on ESPN. And Roy was kind enough to explain, because I thought there was no way that if they re-looked at that play that wasn't a goal. And Roy explained to me that because of the fact they were in the crease and bump coming out, that the goal was disallowed. Is that the way you saw it too?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a rule that was taken advantage of by Carey Price. I mean, the rule states that you know, if a goaltender does not have the freedom of movement in his crease to make a save,
right?
You know, there's going to be goalie interference. Now, what happened was, if you look at that replay enough times, you see Killorn ends up in the net. And as he's getting out, he's kind of delayed in getting out by one of the Montreal players, P.K. Subban.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then Price comes across and makes sure that he makes contact with Killorn. And by doing that, he's now establishing in the mind of the referee that, okay, there was contact there, and, you know, does he get back? Now the play moves across to the other side, and he can't get there in time to stop Ryan Callahan's shot. But it's in the mind of the referee that, oh, there was contact there. And even though Price initiates it, according to the rule, you know, you can wave off a goal for that. And that's the way they saw it. But as veteran referee Carey Fraser explained on TSN's website, he says, Carey Price has mastered the ability to engage that offensive player in some sort of a contact, even though he's not really being interfered with, but
right.
He's made that rule work for him. And I think that's the way ultimately that was seen. And it's obviously robbed the Lightning of a lead at a critical juncture that game.
Right. I just never thought it was explained, at least maybe to my satisfaction, because I'd never heard of the rule before. And I just didn't think it was explained well enough to me. I just kept saying, well, why aren't they reviewing this? Why aren't they reviewing it? And as Roy said, they do review it, but not like they do. And, you know, normally you see one of the officials or two of the officials come over. In this particular case, they review it, in New York or Montreal or wherever they review it. And so there's no need for the officials to come over and explain what happened.
Well, in a play like that, that's not a reviewable play. Basically, the reviewable plays have to do with whether the puck goes in the net.
Right.
And a variety of other things. That particular play is not reviewable, where if it was, I think they might have come to a different conclusion. But
that's what I thought.
If you look at the NHL rule book on that particular rule, they spell out about 10, 12 different scenarios, whether the goalie initiates the contact, whether the player makes the best effort to avoid
incidental contact with a goaltender, all sorts of little nuances to that rule. It's very confusing, and it's very easy to understand how, you know, fans are not going to understand how that call is determined. Sometimes it's just the goal that's waved off. Sometimes there's a penalty assessed against the offensive player, as well as the goal being waved off. So it's a very convoluted type of rule, and it obviously was a very confusing situation there.
I still think, Rick, with the experience we had this year in the playoffs, young players and Ben Bishop coming back strong, this team's stronger than ever. This reminds you of 2003. What happened in 2004? A little souvenir up in the banner.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it so many times, Tommy, where a team has to learn how to deal with the playoff pace, the playoff intensity, the playoff pressure. And when you have 12 players on your team making their Stanley Cup debuts in a four-game span, which was the case with the Lightning, you know that they've got to go through this experience. And they did so without Ben Bishop, who was their MVP all season long. So I think Bishop's presence, had he been healthy, the way he had played against Montreal all season long, I think we would be still playing in that series right now. But the Lightning are going to welcome more young players in next year, so I think that the future is very bright for them.
And the main thing is Jonathan Gruen in the minor leagues right now. I mean, he's the next Steven Stamkos, next superstar for the organization.
Yeah, there's talent coming. Obviously, Steve Yzerman has got a full plate of items he wants to take care of in the summer, and you know whether they're going to be able to sign Ryan Callahan, whether they can bolster the defense with a little more experience, can they fill this need, and so forth. But you know, in this era of the National Hockey League, you've got to build your team around your young talent that you bring in and you groom, and the Lightning have got quite a pipeline going, at least two more goaltenders on the way up. So besides Ben Bishop, and we saw Christer Skudlevskis play very, very well with his team totally against the wall, and he comes up with some marvelous saves to give them a chance to come back in the third period. He's just one of the three young goaltenders they've got coming up with the system.
I think Roy made a great point, too, and it happens so often in all sports that the one thing that they're going to have to be sure of is that there's not a sophomore, takeoff a little bit. Have the same type of energy, enthusiasm, and desire to win the second year that you had the first year trying to prove yourself. Sometimes you have to overcome that.
Yeah, just today they announced the finalists for the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year, and the Lightning have two of the three finalists in Andre Palat and Tyler Johnson, who had great seasons. So now they're going to get some accolades along the way, and that's another thing that you've got to kind of put that behind you when you start a new season and you're starting over clean slate. And
right.
Like you say, you've got to have that determination. Even though you've made it, you have to, as you see the best players in any sport, they're the hardest working players, you know, and that's what they have to maintain.
Rick, coming forward in this series, Marty St. Louis or Vinny the Cavalier? That's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Rangers or the Flyers as it is, and obviously you got Brad Richards in the mix there too. So it's going to be interesting. I think Lightning fans ought to be rooting for the Rangers just because if the Rangers reach the Eastern Conference Final, one of the draft picks the Lightning acquired in the Ryan Callahan deal moves from being a second-round pick to a first-round pick. So the Lightning would end up getting two first-round picks in that deal. So I guess that's what we root for at this point.
That's right. Then you got Dan Boyle on the other side over there playing for San Jose. It's like the who's who of Lightning hockey for this NHL playoffs right now. It's great. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, it's quite a juggernaut they've got going in San Jose, the way they've been finding a way to beat Jonathan Quick when the rest of the league has had so much trouble in recent years in doing that, and he was such a star for them when they won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago. But it's been a dominant performance by Boyle and his guys here in San Jose.
Exactly. Rick, we have to play some golf this year, watch the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. And you and Chief are number one in my heart, and you guys are a legend in Tampa Bay for doing hockey. for all those years. It's great to know he's a good friend and great to watch on Sun Sports, Rick.
Well, Tommy, it's been great to be associated with you all these years here, and you're certainly a beloved figure in the Tampa Bay sports media with very good reason, and I appreciate you having me on your show tonight.
Terrific
Thank you, Rick.
Having
Always
you as a
pleasure.
Guest. We
Thank
appreciate
you, Rick.
It so much.
We do.
Thank you very
good
much, guys.
Good luck to
Take
you.
Care.
Have a great off season.
Thank you.
Wow. Wow. Gentlemen, we had all these legends on tonight, Roy, Rick Peckham, and Frank Tavares, and Susan in the USO, and then you Don, you're a Philadelphia legend. Rogers, the Atlanta legend. Frank, how can we top this next week's show? I don't know.
Gentlemen, I just want to give you a hot item here. Just came off the presses about the NFL schedule. The Bucs will be playing the Atlanta Falcons on September 25th, third game of the season, up here at the Georgia Dome.
There you go.
All right, Frank. Road trip, Frank.
There you go.
There you go. Road trip, Frank. What do you think?
Frank's trying to line up another guest.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the Eagles schedule came out, obviously, too, and they are on two Monday night games, and I think they're on two Sunday night games. One of them, I think, is the Giants. And but they have the most national TV coverage, I think, of any team. I think that's what the blurb said that I read.
I'm sure they're going to have a couple of Dallas games on, too. So the Giants and the Dallas games.
Well, you know what it is, Don? If nothing else, Chip Kelly gets people excited.
No question.
You know, the national media, you know, is after him, you know, about because of his coaching style and his offense and the way he handles everything. And I'll tell you what, I was over at the Falcons yesterday for their beginning of the season press conference. I have never seen Mike Smith so excited about a team. And this, he's going into his seventh year, and he said they will be in the playoffs. Now, when do you hear a coach?
Well, Roger, I think he's on the hot seat, number one. He's pretty much got to say that. But number two, I think they're putting a lot of their eggs in one basket. I think, you know, they figure this is our chance. Before this team grows old before our eyes, this is our chance to make a real run. And I think he's going to follow that path all year.
Well, I think
gentlemen,
right,
like
to
walk
of
our baseball
expert. They've also signed eight free agents and some important linemen, and I think that's the key. I'm sorry, Tommy. Go ahead.
Wow. Gentlemen, I hate to interrupt, but I'd like to welcome our baseball guy, Stevie K. Steve, you're talking to Frank, Roger, and Don. I'm outside Tropicana Field, and I think the Rays are winning 2-0. So, Steve, hope you're watching the game and give us some more insight.
Well, the Rays are now losing 3-2, and Jake Odorizzi's been lifted.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Cole Bello hit a home run. But the big story tonight, guys, is how dumb is Michael Pineda?
Have you guys heard about this? Yeah, we talked about it earlier. I'm watching both games. I'm watching the Yankees, too. And, you know, for him to put it on his neck like that, I mean, he looked like an Indian. He just was all the way down the side of his neck. And, I mean, it was so obvious it wasn't even funny.
Right.
Well, you know
what,
fellas, French said before the game, I hope it's not as conspicuous as it was last time.
Well, I'll tell you, Rick Sutcliffe gave a great explanation. I don't know if you had a chance to see it or hear it, but Rick Sutcliffe did a little dissertation along with Booney on you know, you got to hide it a little bit better than that. You know, I mean, they've been watching him now for two or three starts, and the thing was, he didn't have it on in the first and second inning. He didn't put it on until the third.
I see that, Doc. He put that thing on there and said, oh, boy, it's almost like Major League almost when the guy kept on Vasilevskiy the ball up there.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh. Stevie K, how you doing tonight, sir? Any baseball tidbits you can feed us tonight?
No, I think the main thing was that, you know, the main story is going to be that Michael Pineda incident. You know, it's Sam Fuhl just drove in. It looks like at least the fourth run.
Yeah.
The big story is going to be that Michael Pineda, you know, John Farrell before the game said the same thing. You know, he said, you know, if he uses it, here, I'll give you, here's what John Farrell said ahead of the game. He said, I would expect if it's used, it's more discreet than last time.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. What's funny is the last time we were talking about this, I was offended that Major League Baseball and everybody was making it sound like we were the idiots watching the game, you know?
Right.
And John Farrell said, well, we really didn't see anything. There was no cause to go to the mound or anything. And, you know, anybody who watched the video, even like, you know, during the World Series with John Lester with the green substance on his glove, you know, everybody knew John Lester was putting something on that ball. So, you know,
he should have used it last night.
Well, you know,
let's find
you
that green stuff done.
Hey, listen, you may be onto something there. You know, in this game, you may have figured that each manager was going to be looking out for the first guy. You know, Clay Buchholz and John Lester are both accused of doctoring baseballs.
Right.
You know, and so has Ben Pineda, and this could have been a chess match between Girardi and between Girardi and Farrell, and unfortunately, Michael Pineda screwed up first.
Well, as I say, it's amazing to me. You know, we watched so many players do it over the years, so many pitchers do it over the years, but at least they were a little discriminate about the way they did it. I mean, you really had to have a manager come out and say, look, let's go out and check his hat, his glove, his. But this was, I mean, so obvious. It was like the one in the palm of his hand. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Like I asked this the last time, you know, the visual I give everybody is I'm, you know, 43 years old, and that rosin bag used to be like a jumping jack out there on the mound. It would be flying everywhere. There'd be rosin, you know, there'd be a cloud of dust on the mound. We all know the image I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Nowadays, you'll see that rosin bag picked up almost never. Go to
right,
a game,
right.
Watch a game,
right.
And see, and wonder. They needed rosin in the 70s, 80s, and even into the early 90s, and now suddenly they don't need rosin anymore.
Yep, great point.
It's got to be the material in the uniform, Steve. That's right. Why they wipe their hands off on the uniform now. I'm always being facetious. The best guy Bruce just hit a grand slam for the Orioles. They took the lead.
Ooh.
Nice.
That's why Doug's not calling in. He's sitting there watching the goddamn game.
The best guy I remember, the first guy I ever really suspected of doctoring a baseball was Nolan Ryan. And
ooh.
The reason was every time he unleashed the fastball, you know, and he needed the grip. I mean, believe me, I'm sure no one would ever go to the mound. But he used to pull his back pant up, his, you know, the back, you know, belt loop. He would pull it up with his thumb inside of there, and there was always a brown spot right there. You know, so I was convinced.
Let me tell you something. Lou Burdett used it for 20 years. I mean, there's a million pitchers that have used it, but they're a little more discreet about how they go about it. And, you know, how about Gaylord Perry and his brother? When they went to the mound every time, they never found anything. But he always had it.
I was just going to say that
about
Gaylord Perry.
How about the great, you know, is there a better, I don't know how many guys have seen the movie, you know, Major League, the Indians.
Yep.
But the old pitcher who explains to Charlie Sheen all the different places he hides his little, like, you know, habanero juice and his.
Yep.
It's Vaseline. He goes, at my age, whatever you can get on the ball, whatever extra you got to get. And he tells Charlie Sheen, you will too. You know,
now, there was something we discussed last week, and I can't remember off the top of my head. That you were going to look up and see what the actual rule was. Or so. What was it we were talking about last week that you were going to check on?
Well, whatever it is, I didn't do it.
I think Buddy tore up the paper, did he?
That's the answer that Tommy gives us week in and week out.
No to accounting. Cut Stevie's pay by 50% this week. No to accounting.
Yeah. I expect my check to be a little light this week. No, this week in baseball. It's been a tremendous week in baseball. I know we talk a lot of Phillies on here because it's one of the teams we have a couple fans of, but. Cliff Lee is back to being vintage Cliff Lee. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's in one of those zones right now. Now, normally you say a guy can't stay in that zone all year, but I saw that guy stay in that zone in 2008 when he won the Cy Young
right.
And was just a fantastic.
So that's one of the early stories. And one of the early things I'll be looking for is Cliff Lee and A.J. Burnett kind of taking that team. We had talked about it last week, a team that was having some problems with maybe some communication with the manager, some bullpen, some putting the game together. And Cliff Lee and Burnett really seemed to, you know, the veteran guys want to put that team right on their back.
Well, Burnett pitched a beauty last night. They gave up two runs. They won in the 10th, you know, in that error that the Dodgers had in the outfield. But also, I think, Stevie, it's going to be interesting to see tonight. Hamill comes back for the first time after coming off the DL.
Yeah. Now, that'll – hey, you know what Joe Maddon says? When you get 200 innings, you know, if you can get 200 innings out of a few starters, it makes your bullpen better.
No question about that. And, Roger, I think that – In his case, not only did he pitch a good game last night, even though he didn't get the decision, the last time out he pitched a good game. For that, I mean, but he didn't get the decision there. He went out in the seventh inning.
Right. Well, you know, he also has the hernia, and he said that that is helping him because it's keeping him from over-pitching. And I've never heard that before, but he knows what he's talking about.
I hope he's right.
Yeah, the other another great story from the week has been, this is on the negative side, but Kevin Towers and Kirk Gibson have a big uphill battle for them out there in Arizona. That team's in a lot of bad shape right now.
Mm.
They just lost Trumbo to looks like a broken foot. He's going to be out indefinitely. You look at the moves that over the last 2 years, you know, we sit back and you look at how a team constructs itself. And Kirk Gibson's all about having his type of guy on the team, and it's resulted in dealing Justin Upton, dealing Trevor Bauer, Tyler Skaggs, and Adam Eaton, and not getting much in return for those four guys. Now they're sitting there, and Patrick Corbin has his Tommy John surgery.
Wow.
The team is just, you know, is a complete wreck out there, and, you know, that's something we can keep an eye on. You know, either Kevin Towers is going to have to get rid of Kirk Gibson or the owner is going to have to, you know, clean that entire house out there. But, you know, I know it's early in the year, but if any team needs to put together a win streak, it's them.
Steve, aren't they 5-18 right now?
I believe so. I don't know the exact records, but
yeah, I think they're 5-18.
They are 5-18. They lost again, so.
Oh, boy.
And the Phillies go in there Friday night for the weekend series.
I'm pretty sure they came back and won today.
That's right. You're right. They did. They were behind 5. We were talking about that earlier. They were behind 5-2, got two bases on balls and an error in the ninth inning, and then they tied it up at 5-5, and they won it. I think it was 7-5. I think was the final.
Okay. One of the more surprising moves that Kevin Towers had made was, you know, he traded Trevor Bauer to get Didi Gregorius, a defensive-minded shortstop. And, you know, Trevor Bauer was the number 3 pick in the draft back in 2010. You usually don't see those guys dealt that early into their career. Now, Didi Gregorius is in the minor leagues, and their own product, their own minor league shortstop, took his place in Chris Owings. You know, it doesn't make any sense to deal a top pitching product being a number 1 draft pick because you don't like the guy, you know? Mm.
Well, I tell you, trading is interesting, and there's nobody better at it as far as I'm concerned than right here in Tampa. I mean, it's amazing to me the players that they trade away and the ones that they pick up, either free agents. Belfour is a perfect example, turned down by Baltimore, comes in, and now he's a closer here with Tampa. I mean, it's amazing to me how fortunate, and I'm not saying they're not good. The organization is not good because it is. But you also got to be a little lucky, and they have certainly, as Roger said a little while ago, they've had 3 relief pitchers come out now that, you know, were just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've done a good job when, you know, their entire picking up. We talked about this about the Phillies. You know, the Rays went out there, and you could start with Joel Peralta, Kyle Farnsworth, Benoit, Soriano, Rodney. The list goes on. You know, Joel Peralta, I mentioned, was released by the non-tendered by the Washington Nationals a few years ago. So, but baseball's a lot of fun right now, guys. Any viewpoints from you guys on what's going on out there? Anything really interesting?
How about this, Steve? What? Albert Pujols, 500 career home runs.
Yeah, right. Good point.
You got to give him credit, but you know, I'm going to bring this to the roundtable. you know, when someone hits a 500 home run, people are excited. You know, when he hits a 500 home run with all these steroids and drugs going on, it's like a ho-hum thing up there. In the old days, have been, wow, 500 home runs, next step to Hall of Fame.
Well, here's a pretty couple facts about Albert Pujols' 500 home run that I found kind of interesting. He's the first guy whose career started this century to hit 500 homers.
Wow.
You know, for some reason, his career began in 2001, and I find that very interesting to me. He's only the ninth guy to have, only the ninth guy ever to have 500 homers and a 300 batting average.
Wow.
Well, and the other thing, that's interesting, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 400 and 500, he hit two home runs in the same game, which is also a new national, new American League record.
Yeah.
Baseball
now,
record.
Apparently, no one's ever hit the two in the same game. Now, that hasn't happened for number 500, two in the same game. But I did hear one guy had two in one day, and that was Frank Robinson in a doubleheader.
Oh, that's right.
One in each game to get to 500.
Yeah.
But as far as the passion surrounding it, yeah, Tommy, you're correct. It used to be a big deal. I mean, let's just roll back to the – I'll go to the last big deal for home run number 500. To me, it might have been Griffey Jr. or Eddie Murray with the Cleveland Indians.
Right, exactly up there. Exactly.
There was a big build-up for each of them.
I hate to break this up. Frank says a tick-tick-tock. That means
– Beautiful.
We're out of time already?
Yes, that's what Frank says. He gives me that tick, tick, tick
start.
Hey, Tommy, 20 minutes to get off the radio.
Let's play two. Hey, Steve,
I'll tell you one thing. We weren't at a loss for any topics tonight. Everything was great,
right.
And I'll tell you, Roy filling us in and the information we got tonight, I really learned a lot in this show tonight that I did not know, especially about hockey. So thank you very much to everybody. Have a great week, and we'll all get together again next Wednesday.
Roger, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, Tommy, Steve, a quick question before we go.
Sure, go ahead.
Jimmy Rollins, I wanted your opinion. He's probably going to wind up as the number one, have the most hits of any Phillies player. Do you feel he is a Hall of Fame candidate, or, I mean, a Hall of Fame member quality? Oh, Steve,
Stevie, I had to wake Stevie up, so he was happy to get off.
Say that question for next week,
Roger.
Have
a great week, everybody.
Thank you guys for coming on. God bless everybody. Don, thanks for coming on. Roger, thanks for coming on. Our legends in Atlanta and Philadelphia. And I'd like to thank Rick Peckham, the best play-by-play man for the NHL and the Tampa Bay Lightning, for coming on. Roy Cummings for coming on. Coach Lauren Samuels for coming on. Susan from the USO for coming on. And I'd like to thank Tampa Bay Rays for having hosting us here with their game. They have a 1:10 first pitch tomorrow. Then they're on the road and return a week from tonight versus Baltimore Orioles. Tampa Bay Storm home Saturday night. Lauren said, I'd like Matt Gary, thanks for coming. I'd like to thank always our sponsor, Bradford White Water Heaters of Enver, Pennsylvania. Personally, water, you log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club, give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454. The Abbey course was up there today, Frank. Great greens, great price to play. Give Tom a call, 352-588-2016. Frank, for my family, your family, have a very blessed and holy week. Frank, thank you, Tom. I'll see you Saturday night, sir. And thank you again for a great job, Frank.
Thanks. We also want to thank Dave Tabiri from Champs Sports.
Yes.
Sports Management, and the new Ray Robinson for coming on, and congratulate Ray for the tremendous thing that he did, taking three belts in a single year, back-to-back.
Wow.
It's tremendous.
Yes.
He's a wonderful young man. Ladies and gentlemen,
we'll get him on more often,
brought to you. I also want to say we do not want to forget that those of you in the Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and New Jersey area, May 9th, there's a tremendous card going on, put on by Champ Sports at the Dover Downs Arena. The first fight goes off at 6:30. If you have it's a reasonable fee. To get tickets, you can call 302-235-2500, extension 14. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, and then Women, Police, and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see someone in a uniform, just take a minute to say thank you. It means a world of good to all of us. Also, this program is brought to you in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the Police and Fire Service that have passed away on the job. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, excuse me, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County, Delaware Police, Patrolman Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin of the Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, the Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PD, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Payne, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Robert Germain of the Windermere, Florida Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your face, softly on your fields, and the sun shine softly on your face until we meet again. May the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shem Alekma Yelama Shem Ahezah Yelama Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Mayelama Shem Alekma Yelama
Shame on it, my love.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. We miss you. We love you.